The playoff picture is set. What is our reaction to what should be an absolutely delightful wild card slate? Black Monday is upon us. We have just a few coach and GM firings to talk about so far. What are the future of teams like the Falcons, the Commanders, the Panthers? How are we feeling about those teams as they head into the offseason? And finally, Andy Behrens and I hand out our fantasy awards for the 2023 season, but not like everybody else out there is doing it. You got to hear these. Let's wait no longer. Let's get into it. It's Monday, January 8th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
One of us is dressed appropriately for an award show, and the other is you. I think things are good. I don't know, it's a good week 18 for me. I, as promised, I spent the day at a bar, one of my favorite game watching bars, Siesta Key Oyster Bar, down here in Florida. Had a shout out to them. Had an absolutely incredible time. It's a perfect divey place. It's a little bit biased toward the Bears, which did not go well. I think over the course of my life watching Bears games at that particular bar, I'm probably like 0-4, 0-5, but don't care. It was great to be there. It was great to be among, you know, just meathead fans being meathead fans. It was cool.
Love it. Sounds like you had a great time. Yeah, you posted a picture on X, Twitter, whatever, about like an hour before kickoff, hold the beer. And I was like, yeah, Andy, I'm happy for you, buddy. You did dress appropriately for what will be our official awards show of the year. I don't, unlike you, own any tuxedo t-shirts. So maybe that's something I need to figure out. I don't know. I also, to be fair, don't own a regular old tuxedo either. I mean, yeah. Shoot, I barely have any suits at this point. I mean, what are we doing here? But look, we are going to do our awards show. Andy's dressed appropriately. We'll get to that later on, but we do have to start out a little bit of just week 18 recap. We're not going to go game by game, any of that stuff, but the playoff field is officially set. Niners and Ravens have the bye. We already knew that coming into this week, but now on Saturday, we're going to have Cleveland at Houston, Miami at Kansas City. By the way, just real quick on the Miami Kansas City thing, and I'm not shilling for NBC here. I'm not shilling for Peacock, but I have been stunned, Andy, at the amount of people who are like, oh my God, this game is on Peacock. And look, you know, tough economic times. I'm not like pointing a finger at anybody for not, you know, spending on different streaming services. I'm with you guys. There are way too many streaming services, but as a complete and like utter diehard, I have watched both series 100 times, like fan of The Office and Parks and Rec. I'm like, how are you guys living? How are you living without The Office and Parks and Rec? And yes, NBC did trap me and Peacock trapped me by that is the only place you could find said series. And listen, my Peacock has already pocketed a lot of cash from your boy here, and I've been stunned to find out how many people don't subscribe to Peacock. So that's my thoughts on that.
I actually feel the same way. I didn't come at it through those series. I'm you know, people may know this, I'm a big fan of track and field, and Peacock like absolutely dominates it. It's the only place to watch it. It's the only place to watch like big pro meets, or at least one of the primary places to watch it. So they've been taking my money for a long time, and I've been perfectly happy with it. So I'm a little bit surprised as well. I get it. Like, this is a little bit like the reaction, you know, that first time that there was a Prime Video game and it snuck up on everybody, and you had to tell your parents like how to, you know, you had to tell your dad or your grandpa or whatever how to actually watch the game. Yeah, it's a little bit like that. It's kind of wild, but it was inevitable. It's quite a game they picked for it too. This isn't like what the NBA does, where like they take just a dog of a series and they'll put it on NBA TV or something like that. Like, this is the Dolphins and Chiefs. This is the fun one.
Yeah, it is pretty surprising that it is going to be that game. That is a pretty big one to put behind the NBC Peacock paywall sort of situation. Again, I was just stunned that I mean, maybe I shouldn't be stunned, but I'm stunned that everybody else isn't like, huh, well, you know, I'm having a bit of a rough day. I guess I'll just rewatch season 4 of Parks and Rec for the 100th time. I guess maybe other people are other people have better ways of dealing with their mental health issues, but I don't. So I'm fully subscribed to Peacock, and I'm glad you are too for track and field. I want to spend one day with you, Andy. You know, maybe we get a cooler, we get a couple of beers, and we're watching track and field, because I've probably spent zero minutes of my life watching track and field, certainly on television. So that is pretty interesting.
Oh, man, I'll get you ready for the Olympics. Sure. Let's do it.
All right. Perfect. back on subject here. On Sunday, we got a triple header, Steelers, Bills, Packers at Cowboys, and a pretty big one. You know, narratives abound, Rams at Lions. And then on Monday, we're going to get Eagles at Bucks. Obviously, we're going to preview all of Wild Card Weekend on the Thursday pod. Remember, we are now two times a week. We're Monday and Thursday. So keep that in mind. You will not hear from us again until we are previewing Wild Card Weekend. However, Andy, just any quick thoughts here from you, any matchup that you're really excited, anything that you're kind of bummed, like this team would have loved to see him in the postseason, any reaction to the playoff field?
Narratives all over the place, right? We get the two teams that are involved in the Deshaun Watson trade playing each other. We've got Tyreek returning to Kansas City. That's fun. We've obviously got the Stafford returns to Detroit thing. That's pretty cool. I mean, I think in a general sense, I'm curious as to whether we see anybody either in the AFC or the NFC really like emerge as a very clear challenger to the teams at the top of those conferences, right? Like it just seems like this could end up wrong, but it sure seems like the Niners and Ravens they are clear of the fields in each conference, I think. You know, it's wild that the Eagles are where they are. Like the Eagles and Bucks are all of a sudden playing in this game that involves the two teams that I would love to play if I were an NFC head coach right now. Like, give me either of those teams and they're facing each other, which is a little bit wild. Packers and Cowboys is really fun. Like those teams seem beyond frisky. Like it feels like the if there is a contender that is not the Niners, like it's like it has a good chance to come from either that game or perhaps the Lions Rams game. The Rams are dangerous right now. I don't know. I'm just glad the postseason is here. I think I named every game there.
You didn't really name Bills and Steelers, and I said this on Twitter last night that I had no reason to be rooting for either team last night. I do like the Bills, and I like Josh Allen, I like Steph Diggs. I've always kind of like had a little soft spot for that team, admittedly, but again, really no reason to root for either team last night. But when it became clear that if the Bills won that game last night, we would get Bills Steelers, I was like, oh hell yeah, like give me Bills Steelers, baby. Because I find this version of the Buffalo Bills just perfect, like the perfect candidate to get dragged into the muck of a weird, messy, wild Pittsburgh Steelers Mike Tomlin slop fest. So I'm like, from just a morbid curiosity standpoint, I can't wait to watch that game.
Yeah, no, it's a good call. Like the Bills are the one team, maybe that's a little strong, but they're among the teams in the AFC that you can imagine rising to the Ravens level. But they are also one of the teams in the league that will just play down to any opponent, right? And not that, you know, that's a little bit insulting to the Steelers. The Steelers are a playoff team. They're obviously they do some things well. They have some guys, but man, if they're gonna beat the Bills, it's gonna be an ugly game. They're not gonna beat the Bills in like a 38-35 shootout or anything like that. They're gonna drag them into the mess in which they live and come out on the other side of it. So yeah, the Bills are a wild team. They're a ride of a team, and they can lose to anyone. They can beat anyone.
Oh, the disrespect you are putting on Mason Rudolph's name. Can't win a shootout. What are you talking about, Mason Rudolph, the gunslinger? I think I saw some stat that like the average touchdown distance is like 70 plus yards since Mason Rudolph, like passing touchdown since Mason Rudolph has taken over. Which I mean, just. What world are we living in? I mean, it's absolutely outrageous. Again, real quick before we do Black Monday stuff, teams that were eliminated, obviously that were kind of right there. We've got the Colts, we've got the Jaguars. I think just starting on those two teams there and any others you want to pick off here, I would just say those two teams I think are emblematic of like the different ways that you can be close to making the playoffs, right? Yeah. Like for Indy, it's like, okay, clearly watching that game on Saturday, which was a beautiful game, by the way, that was probably one of my favorites, if not my favorite, that we watched all weekend. It was just one team had their transformative, franchise changing, future altering quarterback in CJ Stroud, and the other team, like, I don't want to come on here and bag on Gardner Minshew, but I'm saying all year that, like, the Colts are winning in spite of Gardner Minshew. And, like, yeah, the other team had Gardner Minshew. So it was just that was the difference between those two teams. Otherwise, like, I would be leaving that season, that game, with my head held high if I was a Colts fan, feeling really good about the future of that team. And then on the flip side there, Jacksonville, I mean, I can't remember a team that was better set up to make the leap that effed it up that hard than the 2023 Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. And I'm also, like, I'm kind of done watching the 2023 Jaguars. Like, I'm not missing them in the playoffs. I don't know. I might have enjoyed seeing the Colts a little while longer, but I'm ready to take a break from the Jaguars. That was quite enough. The defensive collapse at the end of the season, the inability to make plays in key moments, offensively, the fact that their own defense put their offense in that situation. I don't know. I'm done. Like, if you can't, I don't know, you can't squeak past the Titans in week 18 to make the playoffs after a really encouraging run last year. I need a break.
Yeah, I badly, badly needed a break. And I felt the same way about the Seahawks, by the way, in the NFC side. That was another thing. I was like, I don't want to think about them anymore. Some coach firings, some executive firings are already leaking out here on Black Monday. We are taping this at just around 11 a.m. Eastern. So keep that in mind. If any news breaks after this pod goes up, we'll talk about that on Thursday before we preview the wild card round. But for now, we did find out, I mean, the Falcons break the news at 12:01 Eastern, just a minute after midnight following Sunday, week 18, news breaks that they have fired Arthur Smith. Andy, the thing that I think, and we can talk about this because it's, you know, obviously a big topic in fantasy and all that, but I would say that the Falcons reportedly went into the week like, okay, if Arthur Smith wins this game, we bring him back. He loses this game, we don't bring him back, which to me is like, no way. I don't buy that for a second, okay? Because you break this news a minute after midnight, you have already moved on from the guy. So I think it's the right decision for a variety of reasons, but if you've already mentally moved on to the next era, you go ahead and make the decision.
Yeah. This is like, you know, this is a different version of the thing we were talking about last week with Justin Fields, where, like, it didn't really come down to week 18. There's no way it really came down to week 18, right? Like, if you as an organization don't know what you want to do, like, if the big hinge point is the final game of the year in a particular season, no, they absolutely had to know where they were going. Smith himself is just, this is like an all-time bad vibes sort of coach, right? And for his last moment on the field as the Atlanta head coach to have been him chewing out the opposing head coach was just like chef's kiss stuff. That was beautiful. The other coach we're going to talk about here, Ron Rivera, like, you know, it's just really hard for any coach to overcome terrible quarterback play and quarterbacks who, you know, can't actually retain the football, right? Like, quarterbacks who give the ball away that much. So that is really what sort of did him in, I suppose. We've talked the misuse of his best assets to death. That's obviously an issue. His relationship with everybody outside the locker room, right? Like the unnecessarily antagonistic and hostile relationship with media, with anybody who asks him even the friendliest question, was just, I don't know, was unnecessary. Not like these two firings, the least surprising firings that could possibly have happened. And you know, funny that it happened at like a minute after midnight, but also just not shocking to wake up to.
No, not shocking at all. Listen, I don't ever like want to, I'm not celebrating that Arthur Smith got fired. I think celebrating that anybody gets fired is not the best thing in the world to do, just karma wise. Okay. Just not how I want to be. I will say though, if we're reading the Arthur Smith, like, Falcons head coach obituary, you're right. The Dennis Allen thing at the end, you would say, well, he died as he lived, man, because like, I mean, that was just a perfectly emblematic of how Arthur Smith was as the Falcons coach. Yeah. It's like, you know what? He has a point, like running a play out of victory. And by the way, like Jameis Winston and the players went rogue on that decision to run the Jamal Williams touchdown out of the victory formation. Anyways, I did think Jameis's answers about it were pretty funny anyways. Like, oh yeah, that 7 points, you know, that was disrespectful. The 41 before it weren't disrespectful or whatever. I mean, Jameis is obviously, he's a character and was pretty funny about it, but Dennis Allen didn't even approve of doing that. So then, you know, Arthur Smith going over there and chewing him out, it is this final on-field act as the head coach. Just like, yeah, that's classic Arthur Smith. Like,
yeah,
we're our grievances pointed in the wrong direction and we're kind of missing the point here. You know, so it did, again, very classic Arthur Smith stuff, who I still maintain that is a good offensive coach and maybe has a future somewhere else, but it was beyond time to move on. And I would say that honestly, and we can bleed this into the Commanders talk too, but I specifically think that with the Falcons, this is a pretty attractive job. It actually kind of strikes me as similar to the Colts situation from last year, where this is a team that is right kind of on the fringes a little bit, but clearly needs a shot in the arm, like a new set of circumstances, a new kind of figurehead on offense. And I think that would go a long way. And I think honestly, there are players, right? There were players for the Colts, Jonathan Taylor, Michael Pittman, that just weren't reaching their ceilings, weren't being maximized under Frank Reich's staff. And they were under Shane Steichen's staff. And I obviously think that will be the case most likely with, you know, the new, whoever comes in here. I mean, I'm obviously manifesting Ben Johnson here. Of course, I've already put that out there. I would love to see that. That would be great. But like, there's talent here to be maximized for sure. They just got to get the quarterback right. Obviously, I think the Colts, you know, wanted Anthony Richardson. They end up with Gardner Minshew for most of the year. And even that, though, there was still a dramatic boost there. And to further the analogy, too, like Ryan Nielsen's a pretty good defensive coordinator. You know, Shane Steichen kept Gus Bradley around, kept continuity there. I think you could do the same thing there in Atlanta. And so that's an attractive opening. But you mentioned Ron Rivera. I also think this is a pretty attractive opening, too, Andy, because they cement the number two pick. They know the assignment. They get it done by losing to Dallas in week 18 and everything else happens. This is a pretty blank slate to work with if you're looking at Washington. There are some talented veterans here, but otherwise it's like this is a fresh start for this team.
Yeah, it's funny. Both offenses are really they're just waiting for the right quarterback to land there, right? In Washington's case, it's obviously going to be a rookie. In Atlanta's case, we just need to drop in like a league average veteran. That can be any of a number of guys, right? And we'll have plenty of opportunities to speculate on that in the weeks ahead. But you just need to drop in some competent quarterback play to a receiving core that has Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, Curtis Samuel, like whoever's going to return next year. That's a good group. The running backs are a good group. And obviously in Atlanta, we have superstars and potential superstars at the skill spots. You just throw somebody in there who's, I don't mean to say Derek Carr, but like Derek Carr equivalent or better. And we've really got something. Like the Falcons just gave the ball away too often this year, right? Like in terrible, not that there's a good moment to do it, but especially in terrible moments, in game deciding moments. And Washington, of course, the struggles that Howell had throughout the year, his inability to avoid sacks, his inability to avoid crushing turnovers in key moments, like you just avoid some of that stuff. And you've got teams that are contending immediately for the postseason.
Yeah, I like both spots as rebounds if they can get the head coach and quarterback situation right. I mean, I need Drake May in Washington so bad. I wouldn't hate Ben Johnson interviewing and getting this job either. Schefter broke the news. ESPN reported with Woj. In a sweeping overhaul, the Commanders owner Josh Harris has hired two prominent executives, former Warriors, their basketball team for those that live in Matt Harmon realm, GM Bob Myers and former Vikings GM Rick Spielman to assist his group in searches for a new head of football operations and a coach. And again, as we are taping right now, Raheem Morris is already scheduled to interview there. They also requested interviews with both Lions coordinators, Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn. So they're not wasting any time there in Washington. Final piece of Black Monday news. Again, another one that's not surprising. The Panthers fire GM Scott Fitterer. Andy, unlike with the previous two situations where I had some nice rosy things to say. Oh yeah, some people getting fired, you know, all this stuff. There's some things to look forward to here. You get the head coach job, we could be flying here. I do not feel that way about the Carolina Panthers, who, Andy, since Christmas have scored 0 points. They're the only team that has scored 0 points in the last two games.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And this is an executive who now has the, you know, the Bryce Young trade is kind of hung on him, right? There's no positive way to spin that thing necessarily, because they, you know, it would appear you made the wrong pick at the top of the draft, and also you gave up a ton for it. So that's not good. Like, Fitterer had a nice career in Seattle, right? Like, the resume right up until this job was really, really good. Long time, like, personnel scouting guy for the Seahawks during some incredible drafts in the best years of that franchise. But man, you're so right about the Panthers. There's just not, man, they need so much. It's going to be difficult to address it all in a single offseason. And you've just got like a sort of nightmarish owner to work for too, who feels like he wants to fire his way to the postseason, which is just not how it works in any sport ever. Right. It's just a bad, I don't like it, probably as close to a toxic environment as you can find in the NFL right now.
Yeah, it's pretty disastrous. I'm not sure how good Bryce Young would need to be to make the trade feel palatable. But we got a long way to go, man. That's the thing. Like, you can do some like, all right, well, maybe he's Jared Goff. Like, well, you know, he was in this awful circumstance, but like the brass tacks is he is Bryce Young, who was drafted ahead of CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
Who they gave up the next year's number one overall pick for, who they gave up one of their best players in DJ Moore for, who went on to have a career. It's just like, it goes on and on and on. So that is going to be a very unattractive job unless you want to get paid not to work, because David Tepper will fire you in like a year and a half, which, you know what? A lot of people want to get paid not to work, but Andy, we got some work to do here on this podcast. It is officially our awards show. You are dressed for the occasion. I am my typical slovenly self. We're calling this the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show Awards. You know, again, you don't want a Week 18 recap. We're going to pretty much start at this point looking back on the entire season. So here's how this is going to work. We have award names that are basically glorified superlatives. To elevate this conversation, though, we're naming the award after the obvious candidate. Okay, so Andy and I are going to provide our candidates and debate who gets the award for 2023. We're not sitting here doing like, oh boy, Andy Behrens and Matt Harbaugh reveal their fantasy MVP. I wonder who it could be. We're not doing that stuff. Okay. We're not talking obvious candidates here. Producer Colin made it a priority for us not to sit here and run through all the obvious candidates. So we have our superlatives, which are basically named after the obvious candidate here. So then we can maybe do some little hipster picking. And let's start out with our first award, Andy, the Juice Squeezer, a.k.a. the Shane Steichen Award. This is essentially the coach of the year, the coach that got the best out of their team. And obviously, Shane Steichen would have been an obvious candidate for this. So that is why the award is named after him. But Andy, I want to hear your nomination. Who is your 2023 Juice Squeezer? I'm sure half the audience is appalled that I've named it this, or that Colin has named it this. But nonetheless, love juice, squeezing the juice. Shane Steichen is the Juice Squeezer. Who's your nomination for this award?
I actually, like, I don't think that Steichen would have been the obvious winner here. I think the guy at the top of my list is Kevin Stefanski. The Browns won 11 games. They're in the postseason, and they made it with like a week to spare, right? The offense finished 10th in scoring. They had the league's number one defense in terms of yards allowed, and by a wide margin. They played five different quarterbacks this year. They got four straight 300-yard games out of Joe Flacco, all of them wins. Cleveland only got two games from Nick Chubb. Amari Cooper banged up down the stretch. Deshaun Watson barely plays, and when he plays, it's no better than last year. Like, man, you want to talk about a team that was dealt like a bad hand and was consistently like redealt bad hands throughout the year. and still persevered. And they're sitting here with like 11 wins and a playoff berth and a chance to advance beyond the first week too. I'm wowed by the season they had.
Yeah. I mean, the Joe Flacco stuff just perfectly shows what a good coach that Kevin Stefanski has been for so long, man. Like,
yeah.
I think he's just been thwarted by, and you know, everybody in Cleveland has their hands dirty to some degree with the whole Deshaun Watson thing, but, and there was a lot of ways, reasons and a lot of ways that you could have said, hey, this is maybe a trade that you shouldn't make, guys. The one of the biggest just on field football reasons is like, I think he's a terrible fit for Kevin Stefanski's offense. Like, it just makes no sense. It's very oil and water. And like, you've got a really good coach here in Kevin Stefanski. Maybe we just lean into what he does. And Flacco has been that guy. So I'm with you. I think he's an obvious candidate for this award. He was not the guy I was going to nominate, though. I'm going to nominate Matt LaFleur here for this award. Because like, we're at the end of the season now. We're like, yeah, of course Jaden Reed is good. Like, of course Jordan Love is good. Of course Dontavian Wicks is just like a day three superstar receiver. But that's not how we entered this season, right? And even we didn't spend a ton of time at the beginning of the season thinking like, oh yeah, this Packers offense is good. In fact, we're like, dang, they cannot get it right. They're running routes in the same area. You know, Jordan Love is kind of volatile as a player. Like, oh man, you know, I keep saying it all the time, but there were, I definitely saw some Caleb Williams Packers Photoshop jerseys. Okay. Like my eyes saw those on the internet. Okay. So we weren't always on the same page here in terms of this Packers offense. However, they're right there with the Cleveland Browns, 383 points on the season. And from an efficiency standpoint, they're fifth in EPA per play. They're eighth in success rate. This has not just been like a big play producing offense. They've been a consistent and steady offense. And it is such a young group. I mean, we are going to always joke about like the wars fought on fantasy Twitter. They're going to be wars. I mean, all out knockdown, drag out fights about like Packers skill position players in the future because they're all so young. But man, Jaden Reed looks perfectly deployed. Yeah. Dontavian Wicks, like I said, they developed him so fast. He's really good. You know, even the old holdover guys like Watson still is a player. Romeo Doubs is still pretty solid. Like, and this is a group that their best player, their only real veteran, Aaron Jones, barely played this year. So I think this is what they got out of this offense, and the fantasy assets kind of throughout the year that they gave us were pretty critical.
Yeah, the argument for LaFleur, I think, is that it's also on top of being just a great sort of in-season coaching job, it's a triumph of player development too, right? Like, they've obviously had Jordan Love in the building for a couple of years, and you know, they've helped make him become what was he, the QB5 in fantasy this year. Absolutely tremendous season from him. All of the receivers hit, like the two rookie tight ends hit, just in terms of like identifying talent and then developing that talent, just absolute triumph.
I almost kind of want to say this is a tie and not pick a winner here, because there are both of these guys I think are so deserving of this award. And I think it's also emblematic of the actual NFL Coach of the Year race, which is so difficult to parse out. So I feel like, I don't know, Andy, I'm cool going with a tie on this one.
I'm fine going with a tie on this one. I mean, shoot, there's other candidates too, right, who probably belong in this. That like, why is Sean McVay not a part of this discussion? Why is D'Amico Ryan's not a part of this discussion? I mean, there's, you know, it's a great coaching jobs done in a number of places. And I have no issue with a tie here for our fake award.
Yeah, for our fake award. We're going cowardly on our very fake award, and we're giving it to Kevin Stefanski and Matt LaFleur. Let's go negative here. Let's talk the bad bartender, aka the Arthur Smith Award. This is basically the coach that did the worst with the best ingredients. And Andy, I am curious, who is your bad bartender award?
Yeah, my guy's already fired. My guy was Brandon Staley. His team, this is like this is like the one guy whose team had it all, right? Like, at least with Arthur Smith, you can look at it and say, okay, perhaps he was undone by, you know, certainly some of his own decisions, but also by his absolute lack of a quarterback. It's inarguable. Staley's team had it all. Injuries were part of the story again, but it's also the NFL, and injuries are unavoidable everywhere. And look at the coaches that we just talked about. Like, did Kevin Stefanski not have to deal with injuries? Of course he did. Like, you got to overcome it. The defense ranked 24th in scoring, 28th in total yards. 29th in EPA per drive. And that's with like Khalil Mack playing out of his mind. And that just didn't ultimately matter. The offense, which again had everything, including a franchise quarterback, is going to finish 21st in scoring. While Justin Herbert was healthy and available, they were 18th in success rate. They have multiple instances in their season where they sort of snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, right? The Packers game was notable. And I guess I'll let you continue with this, but I'd probably give a dishonorable mention here to Nick Sirianni as well. That team is just reeling as they enter the playoffs.
I mean, yeah, that makes sense to me. I like it. I think both those guys deserve mention, but Staley does feel like a pretty obvious winner if in the non Arthur Smith division. And I think Kellen Moore they both get that award. I get it. Injury stuff like that, but man, that was a disappointing unit very early on in the season with the LA Chargers offense. I will nominate Pete Carroll / Shane Waldron for this award. Like I mentioned, I'm done with the Seahawks. I think Doug Peterson / Press Taylor was pretty close for me.
Yeah.
But the Seahawks are funny, man, because number one, like just defensively, this defense stinks and it's stunk for like 3 years now. And that's like Pete Carroll's baby. Okay. We are so far gone from the Legion of Boom, you know, and Pete Carroll like has sort of kind of tried to get with what the rest of the league is running in terms of the too high stuff and like in like hiring some like Sean Desai was on this staff last year. I think it was last year, you know, and like getting with the meta of the league, the Fangio tree and all that stuff, but it hasn't really worked. And then this year it's just kind of been close to a disaster from a defense perspective. And it's gotten worse as the year's gone on. And then on offense, I really think they did not a lot with a lot of ingredients. They did very little with that group over there. You know, if you look at like offensive success rate, they're top 10 in the league. If you look at points, they're not hideous, but they're kind of mid. They're 17th. You look at yards per play, they're top 10. But again, the points to yards per play thing, I think, is really telling. And then if you look on third and fourth down, they're 27th. In the league in offensive success rate. They're right there with the Panthers, who are 28th, you know, the Giants and the Jets and the, like, that's the range that they're on in terms of offensive success rate on third and fourth down. And I think that really kind of encapsulates where the Seahawks are, where they have these playmakers, but they weren't really well utilized. It's a lot of just like go win on the outside. Let's not really do a lot to scheme guys open. And that was a real big problem on third down, where they could not pass protect on third down. And Geno is a guy that gets the ball out quick. He's not like a hold the ball forever type of player. He reads things out pretty well. Like, he's a smart guy, gets the right read, but still taking a bunch of sacks on third down because their protection stinks. So for a lot of different reasons, they're my nominee for this award.
Yeah, that's a good one. I had also thought of Peterson and could make you can make a pretty compelling argument for Peterson. I just didn't want to talk about the Jaguars again.
Fair enough.
Because I'm so done with them. It is a good argument for Carroll. It's an interesting argument for Carroll. I feel like the total top to bottom failure of the Chargers. And then the way that Staley went out too, just getting absolutely drubbed by the Raiders. I think he's a tier of his own failure as a coach this season.
Yeah, I'm giving the award to Brandon Staley. I think you made a really compelling argument there again. And if we're just talking from a pure fantasy perspective, I mean, Austin Eckler was obviously a hugely disappointing pick. Herbert's season went down the drain there with the rest of the injuries and everything. And
they were
not prepared for any sort of like dings to happen on offense, right? It's like they were one grain of sand gets in the gears and the entire machine falls to hell. And that was, and like, you could have seen this coming with Mike Williams, could have seen this coming with Keenan Allen getting injuries to end the season and stuff like that, right? Like, that was easy to see coming. And, you know, even Eckler is a older running back, like, maybe let's not run back the Josh Kelly, Isaiah Spiller tandem behind him again. You know, I mean, let's just get a different sort of solution in here. It's, I don't know, the way they approached this season, I think, was fraught from the very beginning.
And again, if you look at the list of guys that we named in our overachieving coaches, all of those teams dealt with significant injury issues, right? Like the Packers had, you know, the Packers barely had Aaron Jones at their disposal this year. Christian Watson in and out of the lineup. Again, Nick Chubb plays two games for the Cleveland Browns. They get down to their fourth, fifth quarterback and they're still winning. So like good teams overcome that stuff. Injuries are always part of the conversation. And obviously the Chargers did the least to overcome them.
Next award up here, the What If Wonder, a.k.a. the Garrett Wilson Award, the guy who should have had a magical season but didn't because of injuries or something else with his situation. I'm going to throw this to you, Andy, to go first. I will just say, just on the Garrett Wilson part of this here, Robert Saleh said this morning that they do not anticipate making any staff changes this year. I struggle to remember a more disappointing and just absolutely miserable season that resulted in zero consequences.
let's run that back.
I get it. The Rodgers part of it looked like if they had Aaron Rodgers, I still don't think if they had Aaron Rodgers, they were like a Super Bowl team because they you can't go from, well, I don't know. I mean, you take Mahomes off the Chiefs or you take, God forbid, you take some, you know, Lamar Jackson off the Ravens. But like you take Lamar Jackson off the Ravens, we've actually seen this before. They remain competitive, okay? The Jets just went from Super Bowl to absolute joke, right? So I don't know. That's just my two cents on that.
Yeah, no, it's a good call. It is a little bit odd to come off that season and say, okay, we're just gonna run it back. We like everything that's in place.
All right, who is your nominee for the What If Wonder, aka the Garrett Wilson Award?
My What If Wonder is Kirk Cousins. He was going to pass for 5,000 yards this year, Matt. He was going to challenge 40 touchdown passes too. Like this was going to be a hell of a season. He was injured in his team's eighth game, at which point he had 18 TD passes and he was averaging over 290 passing yards per week. His team had just beaten the Niners and the Packers in consecutive weeks. So they'd kind of turned things around a little bit after a really slow start. And just like when you look at the raw numbers that Nick Mullins was producing in the final month of the season, when he was playing objectively poor football a lot of the time, I just think it's pretty clear that Kirk's full season numbers would have ended up, they would have been phenomenal, probably the best year of his career. Probably in the 5,000 to 5,100 yard range. Good shot at 40 touchdowns, which clearly put the, you know, assuming the Vikings could then put themselves in the playoff conversation, he'd be an MVP contender. This was going to be an absolutely great year for Cousins.
I'm so with you. I love this call. And man, this offense was set up to be, I mean, they're going to be like one of the best units in the NFL, I think, from a real life success standpoint. Like, I don't think they would have rivaled the Niners or something like that, but I mean, they were perfect at the end. Cause it was just, especially when Mullins was in there, it's like, okay, you bet the over on Justin Jefferson every single week. And it doesn't matter. Oh, Mullins is going to throw four picks. Who cares? Like he's throwing for just a ton of yards, right? Like Jordan Addison, I think would have been super productive with Kirk Cousins. I still think he's like a two, but I mean, again, this would have been a really fun offense from a fantasy perspective for sure. And look, like the Vikings were definitely one of those teams. Like, you have run out of gas. You have just banged, like the Colts, I think, banged their head against their ceiling right there towards the end. And that was the way I felt with the Vikings. I think, look, everybody after a long season deserves a nice vacation. I think Kevin O'Connell deserves like maybe a little extra PTO. Okay.
Yes.
That guy dealt with a lot this year. Yeah. Okay. A lot of very like, from Kirk Cousins, who I think those two guys had like a beautiful mind meld. I think they were just really on the same page. You could see it just with the way that offense was running this year and the way they kind of talked about each other. To go from that to like, oh my God, I'm juggling Josh Dobbs and Nick Mullins and Lara, let me throw Jaren Hall in there just so I can get a break. Oh wait, he can't even run a functioning NFL offense. What? That guy needs a little extra PTO is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
My what if wonder, I'm going to go all the way back to the beginning of the season. I'll nominate J.K. Dobbins here. You know, just a guy that I think would have smashed this year, because one thing was clear while we were all obsessed with the passing game and like the revolution and evolution of the passing game and what that was going to look like in 2023. And I think the results of that were worth it. I think it was worth spending the time to talk about that, because it's the reason that I feel different about this version of the Ravens than I have at any other point. But like, it was clear they still wanted to be a run heavy team. They wanted to be a team that could really control it with the ground game. And, you know, Gus Edwards had his moments in fantasy. Justice Hill had a couple of moments. Obviously, like, we were all really excited about Keaton Mitchell when he hit the scene. But man, J.K. Dobbins was on a tear in week one before popping the Achilles. And I just think he would have had a truly special season.
Yeah, no, it's a good call. And this is another one where I feel like Garrett Wilson wouldn't necessarily have been the obvious winner. I'm going to lean Cousins here, because I also like the redemption narrative that he would have given us. But Dobbins is obviously a great call. And you're so right. Was probably on pace, but he was probably going to finish this season with like 14 or 16 touchdowns, something like that. I mean, man, what did Gus finish with? Like, Gus had a crazy touchdown total on this year for being otherwise just sort of, I don't know, mostly quiet, except when they would get near the goal line. You're right. This was going to be a huge year for Dobbins.
Gus Edwards has 13 touchdowns this year. Which is just outrageous. And kind of for that reason, actually, I think I will give it to Cousins. I think we go with Cousins on this one, because the replacement from, we didn't have J.K. Dobbins, and it would have definitely been a special season for J.K. Dobbins. But still, the Ravens were able to survive. Things just completely, like, the bottom fell out for the Vikings the moment Cousins went out of the picture. And I know that we had the Josh Dobbs moment, but that was obviously fool's gold. So I think we give it to Cousins on this one. He was tearing it up in fantasy, man. I mean, I had him in a lot of super flex leagues, and I was kind of like lost at sea there for a minute trying to figure the quarterback situation out without Kirk Cousins. Let's move on to the Diamond in the Rough Award, aka the Puka Nacua Award. Honestly, just like, you could call this the Puka Nacua / Kyren Williams Award, right? Like, yeah, just guys that did not play for the Rams, but these are the late round waiver wire pickups that led to titles. So give me your Diamond in the Rough nominee, Andy.
Yeah, I actually went back to the week two waiver wire column for this, because that's obviously when Puka popped, when Kyren Williams popped. And you could have built a winning fantasy roster off of the names that were on the wire coming out of week one. The guy that I selected here, and this is one where, again, like, Puka and Kyren were the clear right answers. But the other guy that you could have added coming out of week one, who was clearly a fantasy difference maker, was Jordan Love. He was only 32% rostered leaving week one. He's going to finish the season with over 4,000 passing yards, multiple touchdown passes in 8 of his last 9 games, 36 combined scores on the season with 4 rushing touchdowns. He's the overall QB5 in week 17 when you needed him most, championship week. 3 touchdowns through the air, another on the ground, massive game, like a league winning performance.
I like Jordan Love. I think that's a really good name to mention. And you're so right, by the way, that like those early revelations mean a lot. And I said it, I know this is anecdotal, but I ran into a lot of like Puka Nacua / Kyren Williams teams in the playoffs. I don't know if you did, but that was like, oh my God, what a just a masterstroke. Like, oh yeah, I have $100 worth of fab. I'm blowing it all on these two guys. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely something we can remember for next September.
Yeah, that's going to be one of those, like, I don't know, one of those little fantasy takeaways for me. And I understand the importance of having a little bit of fab left at the end. So you can, I don't know, sometimes there's a Rashad Penny story, sometimes there's a Zamir White story, right? That was helpful. But man, if you blew all your fab coming out of week one and you just spent it in the right places on Puka and Kyren, that, like, you've got to, it's more valuable. It's more important to spend your money then. And it's because you've got a full season ahead, right? You're buying like the full 16, 17 games ahead of you instead of hoarding your pennies for the final weeks in the hopes that somebody is going to pop. You know, you won leagues and made the playoffs because you had Puka Nacua. So I just think one of the takeaways from this season is going to be, don't get bashful, don't get sheepish about spending all your fab early.
Yeah, I love that. I'll go with a guy who did score a touchdown in week one, but it became kind of a little bit of a slow burn in terms of him becoming a regular player that you could start in fantasy. I'll go with Rashee Rice here on this one.
Yeah.
Who obviously was a waiver wire pickup across leagues. Really, he did save his best from like for the end of the season from week 12 on. 20.7 points, 10.4, 14.7, 19.6, 8.7, 15.2. He doesn't even play in week 18 to stat pad because he's already like he's a starter that he rests with Travis Kelce. He rests with Patrick Mahomes. Isaiah Pacheco, like all these guys, like that's the level that Rashee Rice rose to. And I, for one, did not see that coming. Like, yeah, he was not a player that I would have like. You know, I mean, look, I didn't see Puka Nacua breaking multiple rookie records, okay, but he was a prospect that I really liked and was a player that was like, okay, I can see him emerging for a year one role. I did not anticipate Rashee Rice being an instant impact type of player. I was surprised by how they used him as this kind of power slot yards after catch guy because he was almost purely like a vertical X at SMU. Just a reminder that sometimes the way these guys are used in college is not how they're going to end up getting used in the pros. So that was an inspired job by Andy Reid and the boys there in Kansas City to do that. He ended up being, I think he definitely qualifies as a diamond in the rough. Everybody looks ridiculous when you stack him with Puka or Kyren, of course, but was super helpful, a player that could have pushed you over the edge in terms of winning a fantasy championship.
Yeah, Rashee Rice was also in the week two waiver wire column. Like it's probably the most important waiver week that I don't know, that we've had in maybe 5 years. It was crazy. Like all of the hits of the season became immediately apparent after week one. He was one of them. I feel like part of his success, like it's hard to talk about his, you know, he deserves to have us just talk about his success on its own. For its own sake, because he was really good in what, you know, I certainly viewed him as a developmental guy, somebody that we wouldn't get a lot out of until maybe next year, the year after. It is difficult to talk about his season without also talking about the absolute failure of every other member of the Chiefs receiving core other than Kelce and Rice, right? Like it was made possible by the fact that Sky Moore was pretty terrible and Kadarius Toney was like hilariously terrible at times. Just a tough scene in Kansas City's receiving core, but like where would they be without Rice actually popping this year?
Yeah, and honestly, if we're just on the topic of rookie receivers, like Rashee Rice was kind of outdone by Jaden Reed. I'm just looking at the game log for Jaden Reed, who from week 10 on, which is kind of when I think things turned around for Jordan Love, by the way, was week 10, that game against the Steelers. They didn't win that game, but I remember going back and charting Jaden Reed in that game. I'm like, number one, Jaden Reed is always open. Like we got to get this guy more involved. And number two, Jordan Love kind of throwing some heaters in this game. 16.9 points, 17.2, 13 points, 3.6 against Kansas City, but other than that, 16.5, 14.2, 23.9 in week 17, championship week, and then 13.2 against the Chicago Bears. And that's 23.9, his best game of the year. That was only in one half because he left with a chest injury. So I don't know. I'm kind of thinking like, I don't know, maybe Jaden Reed is actually the pick over Rashee Rice. So I don't know, Andy, you I'll let you decide this one between all three of those options now at this point.
Yeah. Well, if I'm picking one, it's probably Jordan Love because it's also a way to give a nod to the Packers' other young receivers, right? Like part of that story was Jaden Reed. Part of that story was Dontavian Wicks, who like you were an early Wicks adopter. So full credit to you on that one, man. He clowned people in week 18. God, yeah. Like that was, you know, he's been good in other games, but talk about like, you know, he was juking people to the ground, like on his release. Just an incredible game from him in week 18. He's an absolute stud. But this is like a way of giving it collectively to the Packers young talented receiving core and quarterback. But for me, like Jordan Love, especially in a year where we lost so many quarterbacks along the way, like that's not usually a position where we have to, you know, where half the league is replacing their fantasy starter. But man, Burrow goes down, Cousins goes down, Rodgers goes down. I mean, if you added either CJ Stroud or I think more importantly, Jordan Love early in the season, you were absolutely fine.
I'll allow the Jordan Love nomination or the crowning of Jordan Love for this award, as long as we can say Jordan Love plus Packers wide receivers. Because I think Packers rookie receivers. So I agree. Like Wicks ended up being a difference maker. I mean, Jaden Reed was, I don't want to say league winner, but if I did. Anyways, next award up here, the Death Star defense, AKA the Browns defense. This is just the defense that you were scared anytime you saw on your player's schedule, anything like that. I mean, the Browns defense is an obvious winner. I don't know about you, Andy, but I debated between the, before we decided to do the, like, all right, this team we're taking off because it's too obvious. It was either the Browns or the Ravens to me. The Ravens were the other one that really made me kind of shake in my boots. What about you?
Yeah, the Ravens are the team for me. They finished as the number two fantasy defense, despite only having one defensive TD and one safety. Like usually the team that
finishes, crazy.
It's crazy, right? The team that finishes at the top of the ranks, like the Cowboys this year, they usually finish there because they have kind of a random like six touchdowns, seven touchdowns. Like the Patriots have done it, the Cardinals have done it in recent years. You don't finish at the top of the ranks with like one defensive TD. But that's basically what the Ravens did. Just they did it by like dominating in terms. They led the league in both sacks and tied for the league lead in takeaways. Obviously, those things drive fantasy scoring. They produce double digit fantasy totals in weeks 16 and 17 when they were facing the Niners and Dolphins. Right. So like it didn't like. Man, they were good as a fantasy entity when they faced great teams, and they just, you know, they were tough against everybody. Matt Stafford had a good day against him, but like you were too terrified to start him. So for me, they were one of those defenses. Obviously, the Browns are on that list. The Niners early in the season were on that list. The Cowboys were weird because you didn't really steer clear of them necessarily. They were just super opportunistic. They you know, bunch of house calls, bunch of takeaways. But you didn't see the Cowboys on the schedule and you were like, oh, no, I can't possibly start anybody against them. But the Ravens were like that.
No, I'm with you. It's got to be the Ravens. The fantasy stuff is really good. I didn't even consider that. Yeah, they had these pretty big fantasy days against great offenses to end the season. I wonder how many people like dropped the Ravens for a streamer or something like that. And it's probably just freaking out over that. But, you know, net yards per attempt in terms of passing allowed. Ravens are first in the league. Browns are second in the league. And then really the difference when you look at them as a rushing defense, that's where I think the difference really is made there, because the Ravens were just much more fearsome. They allowed six rushing touchdowns, fewest in the NFL. And then the Browns are kind of a little wild. More from a run defense perspective, a little more middle of the pack. So look, I mean, two great units. I think obviously the Browns, the Dam Award is named after the Browns. I think the Ravens are right there with them as well. Let's move on to the Roller Coaster Award, AKA the Gabe Davis Award. We cannot give it to Gabe Davis. It has to be another player who embodies the Gabe Davis experience. For you, Andy Behrens, and I think, I don't know about you, but I think this has to be a receiver because like it's just, it's the most volatile position for a lot of different factors. Who is your Roller Coaster Gabe Davis Award winner?
Yeah, my guy was George Pickens.
Mine was George Pickens as well. I strongly considered Calvin Ridley for this, and yes, he was definitely up there. But yeah, ultimately, I went with Pickens as well.
The lows for Pickens were like, oh my God, should he even play? Should they suspend him? Like that was the low. And then the high was, you know, 195 yards and two touchdowns. He had five games with over 100 yards. He had seven with fewer than 40 yards. Again, his best game, 195 and two touchdowns. His worst game, two catches for -1 yards. So like you just got the whole range of possible experiences with Pickens. I thought it was interesting, like the week 18 game, the Ravens Steelers game, the whole thing was like an infomercial for George Pickens. He was the focus of conversation in the broadcast booth, and he didn't even see a target, right? Like it said weather conditions and all that. But man, you want a total range of outcome season. I mean, Pickens gave it to you.
Great point about the week 18 broadcast. I mean, they just kept like, my brother-in-law and I are watching this game together, and I was like, are they going to just keep circling George Pickens every time when they're not going to throw to him for probably like good reason when we're at this point in the game? I mean, it is why, I mean, ESPN Ryan Clark famously said that George Pickens is more talented than Justin Jefferson prior to the season. So, and I ultimately went with George Pickens as well for the stats that you listed out, like the volatility in the games and the wild range of outcomes. I mean, Calvin Ridley was definitely frustrating, but the lows weren't as low and the highs weren't as high with George Pickens. Yeah. And like, I know that more than anybody, because you're like, I mean, just a player you can't have a normal conversation about on the internet. Like, you either have to tell, you just have to say that he's like absolute garbage. He can't separate and he's terrible, or like he's the next best receiver in the league. And I think Pickens is a really good player. And actually, depending on their quarterback situation next year, I might be really excited to draft George Pickens, because some of the volatility is actually not, it's some of it is just the way he plays and the type of player that he is. But a lot of it is also the offense that they run and the quarterback position and all that stuff. So some of the volatility is not his fault, even though this archetype of X receiver kind of in the, I mean, he's a bit freakier than this player, but he's a little bit in the Mike Williams mold. Like, they're always going to be a little volatile. But yeah, it's just like, it, you can't have like a normal conversation about George Pickens. It's like, yeah, he's, even in that game, it's like, he's a good player, but like, Deontay Johnson just scored a 70-yard touchdown, bro. Like, it's not like there's nobody else on this Pittsburgh off. There's nobody else that they can work with here. I mean, it was a bizarre, it was a bizarre season for George Pickens. And honestly, like, this is, it's kind of like exactly what I thought this season would be like for George Pickens. There would be weeks where the detractors would want a victory lap. There's going to be weeks where his absolute highest supporters are going to want a victory lap. And and then just like, you have to completely shut up the next week. It's just wild the way we talk about George Pickens. And like, by the end of it, it's okay, he's wide receiver 26. He went over 1,000 yards and, you know, 5 touchdowns. Like, that's kind of about what you'd expect.
I was watching the week 18 game with my father-in-law, and he watches a lot of football and is a pretty well-informed fan. But the discourse from the broadcast team around George Pickens, which was so persistent and so bullish, but by the second half, my father-in-law was like, so is he like Jerry Rice? Is he like Randy Moss? like I was like, no, I really don't know where this is coming from. He's good, but he's not, you know, it had not previously occurred to me that anybody would, you know, have a conversation about George Pickens that made it seem as if he was like in the all-time conversation. But that's kind of where we were.
That is, and we'll move off this. It's just, that is the thing with George Pickens that drives me crazy, is that part of it from like certain sections of the national media, when I'm like, yo, like, before we talk about him as that guy, let's let him become that guy. Okay. And again, I'm aware that he hasn't had good quarterback play, you know, before Mason the Goat Rudolph took over. All right. Like, I'm aware that Kenny Pickett's not good and Mitchell Trubisky is like completely not playable, and that Matt Canada is the punchline of every joke that'll ever exist from an offensive coordinator standpoint. I'm aware of all that, but like, just the way we talk about him from like, it's just the, I say this on my other podcast all the time, but it's the myth making part of it, that like, when he was at Georgia, it's like, oh, this is the next AJ Green. And then he never actually became that player in college. And we still like assume, I don't know. Anyways. For God's sakes, James Coe is like, you can't talk about the Steelers anymore. You need, this is like, it's just a topic that I need to let go of. But here we are giving the Gabe Davis Award to George Pickens. But which, by this is a pretty damn similar season to what Gabe Davis had the year prior. So, and they're in the same bucket archetype of receivers. But yeah, I need to stop talking about George Pickens. I mean, it's going to drive me crazy. All right. Final award to give out here. The Yahoo Fantasy Footballer Award, aka it's the Christian McCaffrey Award. It's the non-obvious fantasy MVP. So again, it can't be Christian McCaffrey. I don't think it can be Kyren or Puka. So who is your non-obvious fantasy MVP this year, Andy?
Listen, I don't think I need to convince you of this, but CeeDee Lamb had a much better case, I think, than Kyren or Puka after leading the league in receptions, 135 receptions. He finished second in the league in yards from scrimmage. Like he's only behind Christian McCaffrey. Closed the season with a 9-game touchdown streak and delivered his biggest game of the year in championship week, in week 17, when you need it most, 13 catches for 227 and a touchdown. Like, that's, you know, that's MVP stuff right there. The fact that he never let you down, like, he was in fact the reason that you won most weeks in the second half of the season, and the monster performance in week 17. I think there's a really good case that he's the fantasy MVP.
Yeah, no, I think he is the obvious answer, and you're right. He has over 1,800 yards from scrimmage because he has over 100 rushing yards as well. Like, they got him as a factor in the ground game. It puts him just ahead of Tyreek Hill there. I would make us. I think CeeDee Lamb, by the way, is the right answer, and he's the guy that we're gonna go with here. I mean, he's just been unbelievable this year and truly graduated into that elite tier, which has just been awesome to see, because I think he's been ready to make that leap for a while, and I think it shouldn't have taken 5 weeks into the season, but at least they finally figured out, like, yeah, we just make the whole offense out of CeeDee Lamb. I will just give a slight nod to Breece Hall as well, who is fourth in the NFL in yards from scrimmage and saved his best work till the end of the year. Maybe this is a biased nomination, quick mention, because he quite literally won me two championships basically all on his own. His week 18 game was outrageous. Touched the ball 39 times in week 18. So if you were, you know, playing a week 18 championship, maybe he is your nominee. He's your nominee. Although CeeDee Lamb had a nice week 18 as well. But yeah, I think CeeDee Lamb is the right answer, but wanted to give a quick honorable mention to Breece Hall.
Yeah, no, it's totally fair. I just think the fact that CeeDee Lamb just never took a week off in the most important, you know, stretch of the season, it's just hard to veer away. Like, it's so rare for a receiver to just never give us a dud, right? But like, you're talking about somebody who finished the season with 8, 9, 10 weeks where he just carried you.
Yeah, absolutely carried you. And from a wardrobe perspective, Andy, on this here award show, you carried me. So I appreciate you, buddy. I think we got ourselves on the right path here in terms of these award nominations.
Yeah, no, this was fun. If there's one thing that, like, I will always show up for, it's the possibility of wearing a costume or the possibility of going with show specific attire. So I'm definitely here for you in that.
Costumes and secret lists. Yeah. Andy Behrens is in rare form as we head into the NFL playoffs. On that note, if you disagree with us, by the way, you can tweet at us. Who's your award nomination for any of these? We want to hear from you. You can tweet at Andy at Andy Behrens. I'm at Matt Harmon _BYB. We would love to hear from you guys. Who would you nominate for some of these here awards that we made up on the fly and, you know, matter to nobody, nowhere? I mean, I don't expect a thank you note from Matt LaFleur or Breece Hall or, you know, even Rashee Rice. I mean, Pete Carroll's certainly not going to return my phone calls anymore after nominating him for the Arthur Smith Award, for God's sake. Pete Carroll, the Arthur Smith Award, Andy. How outrageous is this? But like I said, the playoffs are here. We're geared up. We're ready for it. We are going to be back on Thursday with Dalton Del Don as we preview a wild card weekend that is absolutely stacked. We're going to dive deep on the stats you need to know, matchups to watch for every game. Hey, we might even give you a little bit of like playoff DFS, prop bets. Who knows? We'll see. A lot of stuff coming up. Until then, we're out.